As Isaac is awaiting the return of his father's servant, we find him going out into the field to meditate. The chief servant, as I've already indicated, had been sent on this special errand by Abraham to find a wife for Isaac. And that servant was instructed by Abraham to travel back to the land of Mesopotamia from where Abraham had come, and there to take a wife for Isaac from among the daughters of his own people. Now that journey was going to be a journey of many weeks. They're traveling by camel. They don't even go straight across from the land of Israel to Mesopotamia. They would follow up and round what's known as the Fertile Crescent. And if you look at a Bible atlas and pick Haran, for example, because that was a stopping point for Abraham when he left Ur of the Chaldees before he came into the land of Canaan, you'll find that Haran is up further up along that Fertile Crescent. That is a very fertile region. The rivers are running either side of it, so it is a good way to travel rather than going across the desert. So this was going to be a journey of many weeks, and Isaac is aware of what is taking place. He's aware of what his father has charged the servant to do, and he is waiting the return of this servant. Now we also read about him going on an errand there as well, because in verse 62 it tells us that Isaac came from the way of the well Lehi-Roi, for he dwelt in the south country. So he has been out and about. There's an interesting comment from Jewish commentators on that verse, because some of them think that Isaac was actually returning from meeting with Shem. Now if you add up the genealogies that are given in Genesis, you will find out that Shem was indeed alive at this time. And Jewish commentators are of the opinion that Isaac had been actually in the school of Shem. But there is no warrant in scripture for saying that. There's no scriptural support, but that is the understanding among the Jews as to what Isaac was doing. But he was doing something, and he's returning at this particular time, and he's returned home to the tents of his father Abraham to await the arrival of the servant and his new wife Rebekah, as we have been reading about her here a little in this particular chapter. But at this time we read about this man going out into the field to meditate. And it is that particular thought that I want us to think upon for a little while this morning. Here is something that we ought to do ourselves. Here is something that we ought to do regularly ourselves. Maybe not in the field so much, but certainly the meditating bit, we ought to be doing this on a regular basis. So I want us to consider Isaac meditating upon the things of God. First of all, consider here the nature of his meditation. Because I point you to that word and also then to what you will find in the margin against that word. If you've got a Bible with a margin, you'll know that there are alternative translations put in there by our translators to give a fuller sense sometimes of the word. And against verse 63 and against this word meditate, you will find the word pray. Isaac went out into the field to pray. So the meditation that he is engaged in is going to be spiritual in its dimension. He's not just going to go out and to think about the general things of life, the earthly things. That's not why he's going out. He's not going out to think about business. He doesn't want a few moments to himself because he's got some business proposition that he's thinking over, and he wants to meditate upon that before he decides what he's going to do. The fact that it's translated in the margin by the word prayer is going to indicate here is a man who knows the Lord, here is a man who follows the Lord, here's a man who fellowships and communes with the Lord, here is a man who wants to meditate. He wants time to meditate. He wants the opportunity to be on his own to meditate. Around the tents of Abraham, there's many servants. If we go back to one of the previous chapters, there was a time when Abraham armed more than 300 servants. So there was a large tent complex around the tents of Abraham. But it wasn't just a matter of a few little tents. And there's Abraham and Sarah and Isaac. There's a vast number of servants. Maybe not all of them camped right in close to Abraham and to Sarah, but certainly there would have been a number of them in and around that whole way of life that they had employed. So there's vast numbers, and there's going to be hustle and bustle around the tents of Abraham. And Isaac knows that's not going to be the place to meditate. That's not going to be the place for a little seclusion and a little quietness. He has to get out into the field. And his purpose for going there is that he wants to commune with the Lord. Now we can fill in a few more details. If you turn over to 1 Samuel and chapter 1, here's another place where this word is found in the Old Testament, but it's translated by a different English word. So this will give us, again, a little insight into, well, what is it that Isaac is doing? And we've said it's spiritual in character and dimension. He's praying, he's in communion with the Lord. But if you look at 1 Samuel chapter 1 and the 16th verse, we'll just read this verse and it'll stand on its own. Count not thine handmaid for a daughter of Belial, for out of the abundance of my complaint and grief have I spoken hitherto. The word complaint is the same word meditate and the same word pray. So what we can build up as a picture here is, well, why is Isaac going out into the field? There's something in his soul. There's something agitating his soul. There's a complaint. There's a burden upon his soul. And as this man is burdened, what does he do but take it to the Lord in prayer? And what better thing to do, Christian, with whatever the burden is? Yeah, we might make others aware of it, or friends and family and whatever. We might tell them of our burdens and cares and troubles, but the best thing to do is to tell the Lord about it. Take it to the Lord in prayer. And here's a man who's doing just that. He's got a burden upon his soul, and that burden is taking him out into the field to meditate and to pray, to seek the Lord. Go a little further in the Old Testament, Proverbs this time. And we can add on something else here to this picture that is being set before us. Proverbs chapter 23, and this time verse 29. Proverbs chapter 23 and verse 29, it says, "Who hath woe? Who hath sorrow? Who hath contentions? Who hath babbling? Who hath wounds without cause? Who hath redness of eyes?" And the verse is in the context of consuming alcohol. But let's just take the verse as it is and pick out that word babbling, because this is exactly the same word that you have in Genesis 24:63, 1 Samuel 1:16. In the margin back there as well, translated prayer, it's also here translated as the word babbling. So you can picture this in your mind, I hope. Here's a man who's got so much agitation of soul that it's even coming out in words. Maybe nobody can make out those words that are close to him. But certainly that complaint of his soul is finding expression in words to some degree. It may seem, if somebody was up close to him, that he's only babbling. Maybe they can see him speaking. Maybe somebody could see his lips moving and know that he's talking. And the obvious question will be, well, who's he talking to? He's talking to the Lord. He's in communion with the Lord, because there's a burden upon his soul. And he has brought it to the Lord in prayer. And he's out in the field and he's talking to the Lord about it. And maybe sometimes somebody looks on at a Christian too and they wonder, well, what's that Christian doing? Who are they talking to? Maybe they're talking to the Lord. Maybe there's times when in the course of your day, whatever you're doing, you're talking to the Lord. It's a good habit to develop. Certainly we need those times aside when we take up the Word and spend time with the Lord, but Is it not good as well in the course of life generally just to get into the habit of communing with the Lord? Even if you're driving along in the car. Yeah, you're trying to concentrate and you ought to be concentrating on driving, but can you not talk to the Lord as well? I'm sure many a Christian does that. How important it is to get on your own. Just talk to the Lord. Maybe sometimes talk out loud. Yeah, you can pray within your heart. And there's prayers in the Bible that are like that. Think of Nehemiah's prayer when he was challenged by the king as to why he was sad. And he had a burden in his soul at that time because of the state of Jerusalem. The walls of the city and the gates of the city had all been destroyed. And there was a burden in his soul. And the king noticed that he was downcast. And it tells us that Nehemiah shot a prayer to heaven before he answered. And sometimes the prayer is silent. But other times, Christian, the prayer could be audible if there was somebody close by. You're talking out loud to the Lord. Well, that's what it seems from the understanding of this word here in Isaiah 24 and 63. This is what Isaac's doing. He's out in the field, he's out alone, and he's talking out loud to the Lord. And he's pouring out his complaint, the burdens and cares of his heart. Well, what is the burden? Maybe you've already asked that. Well, what is the burden on Isaac's heart? Well, if you look at Genesis 24 there again, let's go right down to the very last words of the chapter. There's sorrow in his heart. It says that when Rebekah was brought and the servant returned, and we've read a little of that there, the circumstances how that had come about. In verse 67, we read that Isaac brought her into his mother's tent, and he took Rebekah, and she became his wife, and he loved her. And here's the phrase I want you to notice. Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. So there's sorrow in his heart. There's grief in his heart. If you go back as well to the end of chapter 23, you'll find the death of Sarah mentioned and her burial. And then this lengthy chapter comes in between about the servant being sent on this errand. But if we join up those portions, the end of 23 and what we read at the end of 24, we'll get an idea here of what it is that is troubling Isaac. What is the sorrow in his heart? What is the complaint that he's bringing before the Lord? It would seem that it has to do with the death of his mother. There's various trials in life, not just the death of a parent. There's various trials in life that we all have to face at times. You may be here in God's house today, and maybe that's how it is with you. I don't know your circumstances. Maybe there's some trial. Maybe there's some burden, care, maybe grief. What do you do with it? Well, would Isaac give us a pattern as we read his word and think about it this morning? Would Isaac suggest to you and to me as well a pattern to follow? That when you have cares and griefs and troubles of whatever sort, take them to the Lord. Get alone with the Lord. Even talk out loud to the Lord about it. The Lord hears. Although you may not see him, the Lord is there. The Lord is right beside you. He hears your prayer. He'll hear the cry of the heart, but maybe even the expression of the words and putting them into words makes us think a little more about them. Think more deeply about what exactly it is we want to say to the Lord when we have to put it into words. It's always better to give expression to thoughts if they're the right thoughts. It's always better to put them into words. Even get into the habit maybe of writing your thoughts down. Some people keep a diary of sorts, or other times, certainly as a minister, you you keep notes on portions of scripture that the Lord blesses to your heart, maybe even times driving along the road, and you have to get home and write down what it is. At least when you get in a little bit older, you know you're going to forget what you thought about along the road, and you need to get a hold of it in some way or another. So it's always good to write it down sometimes, to give expression to it. And the best thing we can do in circumstances like this is to tell the Lord about it. That's what Isaac is doing. If you think about the general thought of meditation, the scripture has much to say about taking time to meditate. And we all know we live in a busy world. And even though we have so many mod cons that have reduced our time to do certain tasks, we still seem to be those who never have enough time. And sometimes, Christian, never having enough time impacts upon time spent with the Lord. We are so busy here and there, maybe doing legitimate things of themselves, things that need to be done, and we could argue that and defend that and say this needs to be done, but if it comes at the expense of taking time with the Lord, we will be the poorer for it. And I'll illustrate it in this way. We need to develop the habit of meditating. If when trouble comes, then you want to take it to the Lord in prayer. Because it's a common trait of human nature is that you revert to type. You revert to habit in times of stress and trouble. When trouble comes, you don't launch out to do something new. That's not the time when we start to think, I'm going to do something completely new that I've never done before. That's not what you do when you're in difficult circumstances. It is a human trait of character to go back to what you know, to what is a habit. And if we are to be those who, in times of difficulty, whatever they may be here, like Isaac, if we're going to be those who know what it is to get to the Lord and to talk to the Lord about it, even talk out loud to the Lord about it, you need and I need to develop that habit generally in life. That needs to be the constant habit of life. So that then when the time of pressure comes and trouble or stress comes into our life, this is what we do by nature. It's the natural thing to do. We're not doing something that's unnatural. We're just doing the thing that we are accustomed to doing. I've done this so often. I've got alone with the Lord and talked to the Lord about these matters, that when the time of difficulty comes, we know exactly what to do. We're going back to a practice that is constant and repeated in our life. If you turn over to Psalm 1, you'll know that Psalm speaks about the righteous man and also speaks about him meditating. Psalm 1, it says, "Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law doth he meditate day and night." There's various characteristics given here of the godly man. He doesn't walk in the counsel of the ungodly. He doesn't stand in the way of sinners, nor does he sit in the seat of the scornful. He delights in the law of the Lord. And then the last one, the fifth one that is added on here, and five is the number of grace. The fifth one that is added on here is he's a man who meditates. The righteous, godly individual is an individual who's going to have the mark of meditation about them. We're going to meditate upon the things of God. And I've already pointed out what meditation is in the scriptural sense. There's modern definitions of it that you need to run a mile from. They're just humanism, a new age thinking under the term meditation. So I'll put a little bit of caution in there just as I'm going through this. Be careful. Don't accept every form of meditation that passes in the world today, because much of it is ungodly. But the Christian is to meditate, and we've noticed here how the Bible uses that term. but it is the mark of a godly individual. And I would encourage us all, let us have this practice in our life. So you have the nature of his meditation. I want you secondly to consider the location of his meditation. It's in the field. He's gone out into the field. Now, Isaac, like his father Abraham, are both very different to Lot. You can go back into previous chapters in Genesis, and there's a little series of verses that you can trace there with regards to Lot, and how Lot left the tents of Abraham, and he ended up dwelling in Sodom. But he didn't get there all at once. He set his eyes towards Sodom, and then he pitched his tent towards Sodom, and then finally he was in Sodom, and then he was in the gate of Sodom, meaning he was a city ruler. So that's the mark of Lot, and we know the type of man that Lot is. Lot's the picture of the backslider. But Isaac is like his father in that they have the characteristic of the tent life, the pilgrim, they're sojourners. And that's very important. That's one of the things to pick up on the life of Abraham, is that Abraham is a sojourner. He's a pilgrim. And that terminology is used in Hebrews 11 about the patriarchs. They were sojourners and pilgrims in this world. The Christian, you see, is a pilgrim. The Christian is passing through. The Christian is not to put down roots. There's to be a difference between a man like Abraham and Isaac, as well as we're thinking about this morning, and a man like Lot. There's a difference in those two men. And it's seen in their conduct and their lifestyle. Abraham is going to be a man who lives in the tent. And that's going to teach us a spiritual lesson, that the Christian is to be somebody who is a sojourner in this world. And forever long we're in this world, and whatever possessions the Lord gives us, and we're thankful for every mercy and blessing he bestows upon us. Nevertheless, the Christian is never to forget, I'm only a sojourner. I'm just passing through. This world is not my home. We are not here forever. This world is not going to last forever. No matter how much the Echo Warriors would like it to do. The resources of this world are going to run out. That's the one thing they don't acknowledge or don't realize. God never intended the resources of this world to last forever. They'll last for as long as he is appointed, until this world is no more. This world is not forever. And the Christian needs to remember that. And that lesson is brought out in the lifestyle of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob as well. And then a man like Lot is, there's the contrast. It's as if Lot is running alongside there all the time. The contrast. He's the man who has given up the tent life. Set his tent towards Sodom, and then he's ended in living in Sodom. And I'm not going to take you back this morning for sake of time, but if you're interested in looking up, you'll find that those verses that tell you about Lot living in a house in Sodom. You know, that's why he ended up where he did, because he gave up the tent life. He forgot that he was a pilgrim. Isaac is a man who is a pilgrim. He has the tent life about him, just the same as his father Abraham had, and just the same as Jacob coming on behind as well. They're men who are characterized by living a tent life. They're sojourners. And certainly we will be encouraged to pray and seek the Lord and meditate if we remember that we're only passing through this world. There's something more important. There's somewhere more important. We will be inclined then to meditate and to spend time with the Lord. If we know this world is not everything, there is another world to think of. Isaac is out in the field. It will afford him solitude. I've already mentioned that. He can be alone with his thoughts, alone with the Lord. But it's also going to afford him manifold subjects to meditate upon. And that's what I want to draw your attention to for a moment or two here, because there's some details that are given in this portion that I think are worth noticing, and they'll tie in then with that hymn that we have heard the words of this morning, "Great is thy faithfulness." Because if you look first of all at the region of this well, because it tells us there in verse 62, Isaac came from the way of the well Lahairoth, and he dwelt in the south country. So this is the region that this field is in. There's a well that is here, and the well has got a particular name. And that well and the name of it will take us away back to the life of Hagar and the time that she fled from Sarah's tent and Abraham's tent, and the Lord came to her. It's Genesis chapter 16 you need to go back to, and verse 7 to 14. And if you look at that portion, you'll find this well mentioned, and you'll find the name of this well, and you'll recognize that little saying, "Thou God seest me." Because Hagar named that place this name that means, "Thou God seest me." Literally, it is the well of the living one seeing me. The well of the living one seeing me. There is a living God who sees his people. Is that another reason to bring your cares and my cares to the Lord? There's a God who sees. There's a God who knows. He knows all things. He knows the end from the beginning. He understands. He sympathizes. Not only does he sympathize, Christian, with you in your distresses, but Hebrews tells us that he sympathizes with you as to how you feel. He's touched with a feeling of our infirmities. Not just with the infirmity. Oh, you might be touched with the infirmity, whatever that might be. The Lord's sympathy goes beyond that. The Lord feels for you in your circumstances, but he also feels for you as to how that impacts your life and your thoughts and your emotions and your heart. He sympathizes with you as to how you feel. And we know that our feelings change. We are not like the Lord in that regard. The Lord changes not. He is without, as our confession of faith says, he is without bodily parts or passions. So the Lord doesn't have feelings in that sense that change. And our feelings go up and down. The Lord is constant. He loves constantly. Let's just take that as an example. His love doesn't change. We know that. It's an unchanging love. And the reason why it's unchanging is that he is without passions. But you and I are given to change. And how we feel changes. And oftentimes how we feel is dictated by our circumstances. I would suggest that that ought not to be, but that's how it is with us. Or how we feel is dictated by our circumstances. When all is going well, we can be in cloud nine. And as soon as a little bit of trouble comes, we are sinking down into despair. That's human nature. That's fallen human nature. But my friend, learn this afresh. There is one who knows. There's one who knows. There's one who sees. Hagar said, and that's how this well got its name. Hagar named it, and she named it because the Lord found her there. The Lord found her. And she ended up having to say, "Thou God seest me." Away out in a wilderness, it seems, at that time, where there was nobody else around. She was fleeing from the tents of Abraham, wanting to get away from Sarah altogether, but she couldn't get away from the Lord. And the Lord found Hagar. And as a result of what the Lord did to her and said to her, this is what she did. She named this place. And the meaning of the name is, "Thou God seest me." And today, Christian, the Lord sees you. Whatever your circumstances are, whatever burdens and cares and troubles you might have in life, there's one who cares and there's one who sympathizes. He's the God who sees. But also, I want you to notice something else here about it, because it tells you that it's in the south country. It's in the region of the south country. And we might know that to be Beersheba. And that's another well. The word Beer, it's not the name of, name Beersheba is not here, but, well, maybe we should just go back. Genesis 22. Let's just put in the details. Verse 19, because this is where Abraham is living at this particular time. It says, so Genesis 22, verse 19, so Abraham returned unto his young men, and they rose up and went together to Beersheba, and Abraham dwelt in Beersheba. And Beersheba is another name really for the south country. But Beersheba has a meaning as well. The word beer there is the word well in the Old Testament. So what is it? Hagar had a well that she named, and she named it that the Lord saw her. Well, what's the name that Abraham's giving to this well, Beersheba? Well, it's the well of the oath. It's the well of the oath, or the well of the covenant. The well of the covenant. And we read about Abraham entering into a covenant in Genesis, and the name that was given to the place where it all happened is Beersheba, the well of the oath or the well of the covenant. So Isaac is out in the field and he's meditating. And all I'm doing here is just taking the names that are given to us in this place where he's meditating and suggesting to you, well, here's some things to meditate upon. Here's some things to meditate upon. One, the Lord sees me at all times. The Lord knows me and everything about my life. And also, the Lord is faithful. The Lord is bound to his people by a covenant that he will never break. He will never break. That covenant is made with Christ on our behalf, not made with you. Because you and I cannot keep the terms of any covenant now. So the covenant is not made with us. The covenant is made with Christ on our behalf. And he is faithful in what Christ has done for us. And the Father is faithful in what he has promised that he will do because Christ is faithful. So the covenant is sure today. There's no doubt about it. God is bound to you and I today. If you're a believer in Jesus Christ, then he's bound to us today with a covenant that can never be reversed, can never be broken. Is that not something to ponder? Because out of that thought of a covenant that can never be broken, there comes the great truth of God's faithfulness. Not just in temporal things, but in everything. God will abide faithful. His purpose toward us does not change as our circumstances change. And sometimes we are inclined to think that, you see. And part of it is the devil too, telling us a lie. But we think that because our circumstances have changed and maybe difficulty has come across our path in some way, and the automatic thought is, well, why is the Lord doing this? Does he not love me anymore? As if love is only going to be the bestowal of the things that we like and want. That's our thinking oftentimes. We reason like that. Reason falsely, but we reason nevertheless. Oh, why is the Lord doing this? The counter to that should be, let's meditate upon his faithfulness. Let's meditate upon the fact he is a covenant that he will never break and he can never go back upon. And his purpose to me is the same today as any other day or ever any other day to come. Is that not something worth pondering and meditating upon? And that covenant is unshakable because it is made with Christ on your behalf and my behalf. It can't be broken then. It could be broken if it was made with us because we would never keep the terms of it and then it would fall apart. But it's not made with you and it's not made with me. It's made with Christ. And that's altogether different. That changes everything. It's made with Christ. Psalm 111 verse 9, need to hasten on. Psalm 111, verse 9, he sent redemption unto his people. He hath commanded his covenant forever. Psalm 111, verse 9, if you want to mark it. He sent redemption unto his people. He hath commanded his covenant forever. Forever. Is that not worth meditating upon? Very quickly, I want you to think here in conclusion about the reward for his meditation. I'll just highlight this and we'll come to a close. First of all, it tells us that he lifted up his eyes. Verse 63. Isaac went out to meditate in the field at the eventide, and he lifted up his eyes. Did that come about as a result of his talking it over with the Lord? Just at that moment, the Lord had a mighty answer to prayer for him. And he's going to lift up his eyes and he's going to see Rebekah coming, as the rest of the verses there tell us that that's what he saw. The Lord can lift up our eyes, Christian. Maybe you come to God's house today and you're cast down. You're weary, weary of life. The Lord can lift up your eyes. He can lift up your eyes to behold better things. To behold him. That's certainly the case here. It says that he was comforted. We'll go back to that phrase at the end of the chapter, verse 67. He was comforted. Is that a reward for meditation as well? The Lord comforts his people. Again, we could go over to the New Testament where Paul spoke about God comforting you and me so that we can comfort others. 2 Corinthians. Why does the Lord come to comfort us? Oh, certainly it's personal. We need the comfort. But then, Christian, it's so that you and I can minister to others. We can minister to others. We can minister to others with the knowledge that God does comfort. And we can say, I've known this. I've experienced this. And as a result, we can then comfort others who are in tribulation. It's not always about us. Yeah, there's a blessing, a personal blessing, but it is that we then might minister to others. And it is not one of our great callings that the Christian has in life. Isaac meditating in the field. I trust the Lord will bless his word today.